Welcome, friends, to Tanked Up, the podcast all about video games and beer. I'm one of your hosts, Ben, here with Adil.
Hey.
And Lucy.
Hi.
We are going to drink some beers on this lovely hot day and talk about some absurd toys for children. I'm going to open a beer. I'm gasping. I'm gasping. I haven't had a beer for an hour. I'm going to drink.
I was going to say since last time we recorded.
I've had a few beers over the last couple of days. I went to my nephew's birthday party yesterday because I drove. I was on alcohol-free beer all day. So today I've just been like, I'm just going to have several beers through the day.
I thought you were going to say like how you were just going to get tanked up at your nephew's birthday.
Mate, yeah, how old is he?
Everyone else did. It was literally me and my mum's partner just on the alcohol-free beers. Everyone else was like, oh, this is more of an adult party. The four-year-olds will go to bed very soon. Yes.
To clarify, your nephew's not 18.
He's definitely not 18.
Everyone's taking excuse for
there's a few years until then, yes. That's it. That's exactly it. It's like, how can we get some people we enjoy in a room together and drink? A child's birthday, hooray!
Yeah.
I mean, not to put that on my brother, we do that as well here. Just drag them up for a boozy
day. Why not?
Absolutely. So, I've been drinking some Bristol Beer Factory beers this afternoon. The last one I've got is a new one called Neon Crossing. It's a Tokyo IPA, and it suggests, it's 5%, Tokyo with a splash of West Coast citrus. We've crossed the Rubicon again. Rice lager meets West Coast IPA. 30% rice and sriracha brings the iconic crisp and dry start of Japanese lager. West Coast Citra and Amarillo adds citrus IPA zing, bringing you back for more. And then just the word drift. I assume that's a Tokyo Fast and Furious reference.
Yeah.
But
one of the greatest films of all time, of course.
it is an underrated gem of that franchise.
Yeah. I really like that one.
I think I've probably seen it once.
Oh,
I don't know whether I've ever seen it, before the first time.
I had a dodgy DVD copy of it, and I watched it probably far too much.
Brilliant. Well, Lucy.
I think it was probably the best one until they did that, the middle ones with the new director who made, I think it was 5, 6, 7. He continued doing them, but when they nailed it as an actual continuous thing before they
one
went
and
to
two, though I really liked I think I went back and watched them. They're good films. They're obviously not as quite as bombastic and stupid as five onwards, but it's happy Father's Day, Ben. They're good movies. Well, compared to stuff that comes out now, anyway. there's something quaint about them.
Mm.
Whereas, when they started getting all that money, they just became ridiculous in a fun way at first, but then in just a, this is like Sharknado levels of shit.
It's less about family now.
Yeah.
More about
going to space in cars.
Guns and action. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Where else can we put a car?
I think they've probably done volcanoes and everything.
Good beers. Lucy, what are you drinking this evening?
Yeah, I doubled up unknowingly. I bought this. I saw it in the beer shop, and then I bought it, and then I went back to the beer shop. And I was like, did I drink that? I can't remember. Let me just pick it up again. Yeah. it is a beer from Trillium, yes, that's the one.
Nice.
Otherwise, it's one of those American ones. It's called Galaxy Cutting Ties. It's a double IPA, with raw wildflower honey. So that's what I picked it up twice. I was like, that sounds intriguing. 8.5%.
Lovely. Nice. Adil, what are you drinking?
Yeah. Oh, I've got a special one this week. I've got the Vault City Molten Inferno. It's a mango, habanero, and ghost chili sour. 6.5%. Some like it hot, others like it hotter. Hotter than Guy Fieri in a flame shirt weave. turned up the heat on Mango Inferno and brewed Molten Inferno for all you hotheads out there. Lush, ripe mango leads the way. Slice through with fiery habanero and ghost chili heat. Prepare for this to hurt so good.
Yep. Quick aside, is it Guy Fieri or is it Guy Fieri? I heard that sound. It was a Fieri. Weird pronunciation.
I mean, it's spelled Fieri.
Hmm. But I think people...
And he, I'm pretty sure he says Fieri, but maybe the, like, Italian pronunciation's different, maybe. But, you know, Americanized, because he's American.
And there was a theory that he doesn't actually eat any of the food on...
He just, like, vomits it in, like, a tank.
Maybe not that extreme, but yeah, there was like conspiracy theories where it's like he doesn't eat any of the food. You don't actually see him swallow the food, but it's like he's probably having to make multiple edits and cuts of this. Yeah, maybe not every time he's doing it, but yeah, there was this conspiracy where he's like he never eats the food, and it's like
that's he puts it in his mouth and cuts away to something else just instantly so he can get rid of it. Fair. Cool. Right. Let's roll round. Neon Crossing. That is the one of the clearest beers I have had.
Oh my god!
Very
is that a beer? Well,
it's like a shandy.
Yeah. Did he just put that underneath the table and relieve himself?
I mean, it does look a little bit like that. Yes.
At least you're hydrated.
I mean, mine's cloudier than this. Jesus. it's got a nice little. It's got a nice little zesty nose. A little bit of lime, perhaps. And the, like, it came out carbonated, but it's lost a little bit of that carbonation. Like, doesn't, when you sip it, you're not getting a huge amount of carbonation. It's quite flat. But with that, there is still a refreshing element to it. It's very light, very crisp. You're getting a bit of a sweetness cutting through. I don't know whether that's maybe the addition of the sort of sriracha. It's kind of got this slight bit of like vanilla to it. There's a little bit of sweetness in there, a little bit of vanilla in there. And then this very tropical citrus sort of flavor creeps in, and it's a little bit mango, it's a little bit limey. But it's all very light. Like the flavors are all quite light. Nothing is that big in it. And there's no, I know it said it's with a West Coast sort of crossover with a rice lager. But I think that rice lager, that sort of the light, crisp lager flavor versus a West Coast IPA has killed any of that sort of pine or bitterness, any of that kind of longer lasting finish that you might have with more of a West Coast IPA. There's a touch there, but everything's so light, including that, that you just lose it very, very quickly. However, it is very nice. I think if they'd have cut out the, you know, if this hadn't have said the word West Coast on it, I'd have been like, yeah, cool, this is great. This is doing some lovely, you know, it's a nice flavor. It's very refreshing. It's very crisp. I could sit and have this in the middle of the afternoon in the garden. It'd be really, really good. But because they've said West Coast, and it is missing just a little bit of that, I think. But it's still very nice. Just don't expect the West Coast to suddenly trounce over the top of this.
Yeah. Mm. But some of those rice lagers are quite nice, to be fair. And on a day like this,
Yeah, absolutely.
Perfect kind of weather.
Yeah, definitely. Lucy, we'll come to you for Trillium. Yeah.
Yes, it looks like, well, opposite of yours, Ben. Very much. Like thick and...
Mango juice.
Opaque, yeah. And it smells like mango juice. Right. Yeah, just like papaya, mango, just like all the tropical fruits, just delightful. Guava. Not getting much honey, but the thing, it's wildflower honey, so I guess it's just wild honey, but which is... I can't remember the last time I had like wild honey, but I think I remember it being like a bit more understated than, like, you know, your supermarket processed honey.
Yeah.
And, you know, a bit more, less viscous. But yeah, it smells delightful, man. Gee.
Nice. Be interesting to see, because a lot of those flavors are a little bit sweeter, those tropical fruits. Mm-hmm. It'd be interesting to see if the honey cuts through any of that.
Not at first taste. Okay. You're a little thing on the back end. It's quite bitter, which is nice. Because, you know, expecting this to be like very fruit forward, just from the look of it and the smell of it.
Mm-hmm.
Very tropical and fruit forward, but it's got a decent amount of bitterness at the end, which is surprising.
Nice.
It's very easy, very smooth. Yeah, you're sort of getting you are getting those like fruity tropical fruit flavors, but it's like the bitterness is there at the start. It isn't just in the aftertaste at the end. It's like kind of like having like sort of the rind of some of these like kind of tropical fruits as well. Like a bit more pithy, a bit more bitter right at the start. I think I would have preferred a bit more of like a taper into that bitterness at the end, rather than it being just like right at the start as well with that fruit, because like smelling it, you're getting much more of those fruity, tropical fruity flavors in the aroma than you are on the taste, which, you know, kind of dampens my enthusiasm a little bit, but it's still a very good beer. And it's I know like so many times on this podcast we've said, oh, drinking like a double IPA, like an 8.5% beer or 9 or some 10, and you can't even feel it. It's like drinking like a 6% beer. This one, I'm feeling that alcohol burn, which is like, I thought I'd have been racing through this, but it's like, oh, that bitterness plus that alcohol burn. This is like one that probably just like linger on the palate and I don't have to keep drinking it. Which is nice. Sometimes you want a beer and it's like, yeah, I'm drinking a big boy beer and I'm not just going to smash it back in the space of 10 minutes. I didn't expect it to be as alcoholic or as bitter. I think maybe that honey is lost in it. Maybe the wildflower honey. Well, it says raw wildflower honey. Maybe that's contributing to, some of the pininess, some of the grassiness, some of that bitterness at the end. But I think maybe when my palate like acclimates to it, maybe I'll start picking out some more things. But at the moment, it is just very bitter from start to finish. Not acrid or, you know, overwhelmingly so, just more than I expected. So I'll see if I can pick this apart as time goes on.
Fair.
But yeah, nice. It's nice so far.
Good. Adil, Molten Inferno. Before we jump in, I did check. I was like, oh, I wonder if Adil drinks a lot of Alt-C. I wonder if he's had the Mango Inferno before. So I had a quick look on Out of Lies just to check our previous post. And actually, we drank it when we had Andy Gibson from Vault City on just over 200 episodes ago.
Holy shit, has it been that long?
Yes, 2021, April of 2021.
Going to dust.
We had Mango Inferno, or some of us did, because I know we kind of all did a couple of beers each, didn't we? But
I remember having a mango beer from them in lockdown, and that was very, very good.
Yeah, I think I remember having one from them. I didn't remember it was the Inferno, though.
Yeah.
Fair. Well, Molten Inferno.
Yeah. Oh, wow. So it is orange, quite viscous. I don't. You can't quite see, but it clings to the glass. It's only a 6.5%, I think. But it is a 5 out of 5 on their spicy scale, which is literally just the sour scale they usually use, but with flames on all the little bubbles. It smells nice. It smells a bit cayenne-y and a bit mango-y. And I want to say a hint of tangerine, which I'm sure is just the melding of those and the alcohol sweetness. It smells really great, but let's find out.
I feel spice works well with stouts. With sours? Yeah. Not sure.
First swish, letting all my taste buds go. I mean, it has heat. I would say I could immediately feel the cayenne. And then the ghost chilies. I don't know if you've ever had them before, but they're much more like back-end slow burn.
Mm.
Unfortunately, there was like a moment in between the cayenne and then the main spice hitting in, which I would say is, we'll find out after I have more, but like low grade in the sense of like my mouth isn't on fire, but all my taste buds have been hit. Like, which is kind of what the higher capsicum chilies tend to do, right? They just like enrage all of the things versus like cayenne tends to be like, there's a spike. These taste buds hate you, but the rest are fine. This is like everything. Mm-hmm. So the combination, I can see why people be like, oh, Inferno. But the mango-iness was sort of masked while my palate acclimatized, and now in the finish, it's actually quite lush. Like I'm feeling the tropical, the juicy, like overripe mango on my palate, and I think it's because even though it's kind of a light taste, the fact that all my taste buds got like kicked in the face means that lingering light mango is like, it doesn't feel like my mouth is full of mango, but I can notice those lingering mango notes on the finish.
Mm.
Yeah, I mean, I think from okay, so yeah, now taking a bigger sip, I can definitely feel it. There's a moment where it spikes and like my throat's like, ugh. But like, bit disappointed because I'm not getting a lot of the mango. Like I'm getting the, oh, this is fiery. It's not burn my face off fiery, like drinking hot sauce challenge type thing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But it is like for a beer, it's like it's spicy, and I like the lingering spiciness after the main taste finishes because it's a tingle in the mouth and it feels like I've had something spicy, but I still have liquid in my mouth, so it's a nice little contrast when usually when you have really spicy foods, the only liquid in your mouth is your the saliva your poor mouth is trying to use to drown out the spice. But I feel like the mango is getting quite drowned. Yeah, there's this moment in the taste curve. You feel it right here in the back of my throat where it's like, right. Everything's fine. I swallowed. Oh, I'm talking. And my throat is closing. And then there's a nice low burn on the sides of my tongue.
Hmm.
This might build up, right? I might hate this by the end. But it's interesting, but I'm disappointed because so it was called Mango Inferno before. Was that right?
Yes.
Yeah, and so, like, yeah, they took the mango off the label, and that's kind of what happened here. Like, the mango's interesting, and those are notes I'm, like, having to look for, and then I'm like, this is cool, but there's so much, like, residual heat going on that if I was, like, as soon as I stop talking about this and we start talking about something else, I'm not going to notice those as much, and it's just going to be kind of spicy. So it's, like, it's leading towards, at least after these first few sips, a little, like, one note where it's, like, yeah, there's two... I like the dynamic tension of the two heats, but like, this is based on a mango drink that I recall liking. Now that you've reminded me that was a Mango Inferno, and it's just very little mango is getting through, and obviously, even more so than usual with Vault City beers, it's not that like a beer.
Yeah,
right. So like, it's an interesting experience, and like. This is the type of thing I would want to bring to like
a Halloween party in the park, a barbecue. Hell.
Yeah.
Right? So a Halloween party and say this is hell themed and we have hot.
I was just thinking like mango at a barbecue drinks. Where you share it with like 4 to 6 friends and you each just have a little bit, right? Like I wonder what it would pair with.
It's not like a dry heat, is it? You're not compelled to like try and keep going back to
no.
it because that's good. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Oh yeah. What do you pair it with? I'm not sure because the mango is still there, right? So that makes it's not just pure heat, which is much easier to like find a thing with. But like I would drink this, and then honestly, this is one of those things where I could take a reasonable amount of spice. And I have a bad barometer for what other people's, how low to go to be reasonable for the average person as a result. The first time I cooked for friends in Durham, I made a Thai green chili, and I only put two bird's eye chilies in it.
Okay.
And then I cut the rest that I normally put in on the side to put in raw for mine and anyone else who wanted. And two of my friends were like, this is delicious. I can't have any more. And I was like, fuck.
I think you asked them what chilies they ate when they grew up. If they said, oh, jalapeno, and that's spicy, then you just like...
Well, yeah, yeah. I thought I was toning it down, but of course, the green chili paste already has some heat in it, and that's probably what I should have just left it as and just done all of the chilies on the side. But I'm like so used to having chilies
your
in the fridge, putting whatever, right?
Your palate, yeah.
And so I don't, this would be an interesting thing was like, is this like, how spicy is this for my friends? Like, you could have a, you know, a fun moment at a barbecue. It is thirst quenching. Like as you can see, I'm not reaching for it, which is interesting given like the heat. And I think part of that is the mango. The heat is like that, like, mostly that low grade heat. And so once it fades, it's not lingering and the mango is coming out and it's quite viscous and fruity. So like, I'm not, then there's no bitterness. So there's nothing drawing me back to it except trying more. But like, if I bought a six pack of this, I would not be super happy with myself, right? there's not a lot bringing me back to it, and I'm, except for like tasting it and like I like interesting things, like I don't regret buying it, and I think this would be one of those even more so. Like, a lot of people buy Vault Cities because easy drink, you know what you're getting because what's on the tin is what it says. So while this is like, I want to experiment, I want to see like how inferno this is. I'll finish this can, I'll be happy, but I doubt I'd reach for it again.
Yeah, fair.
I think about a month ago I saw a couple of lads in a bar. I think it was like bright green. I can't remember what
it's the new slime one. So remember the
Future blue monstrosity? Like slurm or something like that?
Do you remember the blue monstrosity I had a couple years back?
Yeah.
Yeah. It's the next one in that series.
Right.
Gotcha. I thought it was like a Futurama.
Slurm?
Slurm's
McGill. Slurm's McKenzie.
Yeah, yes.
Gotta keep partying. Fuck, I should rewatch Futurama. Maybe I'll...
you should.
Get my DVD backups of it off the old hard drive and watch those on the plane.
It's on it's on Disney, isn't it?
Oh yeah, but I meant
watch
it properly.
Yes, I have just realized that Dragon Ball Super is on Disney as well. So I've just been watching through that. I've been sat doing a bit of work occasionally over the last week.
Nice. How far in are you?
Ooh, not far. Sorry, how far in am I? Yeah, just to.
Very sorry.
Not far in, like episode.
Isn't that like 7,000 episodes?
No, because this is one of the newer series, so I think there's.
Okay.
Disney.
It's not like the 900 episodes of Dragon Ball Z.
It's close. Disney has 131 episodes.
Yeah, like I said,
Dragon Ball Super.
Really that many episodes?
Just
I feel like I watched during the pandemic in like 2 weeks.
Yeah, they just started the tournament.
You may well.
Yeah, they just started the intergalactic tournament, so I'm on episode 32.
Because it starts with meeting Beerus, right?
Yes.
Yeah. Beerus.
Yep. Yeah, look, we're on topic.
Yeah.
Not beer.
Well, to bring us the topic, maybe I'm going to talk about a game I haven't played much of, only an hour and a half, called Will Follow the Light. I've got a code for it on Steam. It's a walking simulator, right? It's a bit more of a news kind of game because there is a bit of exploration to it, but it sets it off as being a very atmospheric experience. You play as Will, and you start off by, at least on the island that you're on, checking that the lighthouse is working, and then narratively something goes wrong with the town and all the power cuts out, so you've got to go and then check the lighthouse again, then you head into town, and it tries to build a narrative quite quickly, and I think quite successfully. in that I'm kind of invested in what the characters are doing, but it then threw a load of random blocks in my way. So when you get to the next area, it makes things quite linear in how you have to move through, and then suddenly opens up into the town. And whilst a lot of the town is blocked off and you can't go to, the sort of quests that I need to do to progress the narrative are making me bounce around town so much. I'm like, well, I was here, like, you're making me just walk across almost an empty space just for like 2 minutes and then back to the same point. And now I've got to go back to another point, which is up next to the first point. And it's bouncing me around, I think, just a bit too much that I feel like it's just wasting my time a bit. And it's kind of one where it's like, go and find the fuse. I'm like, cool, I'll go and find the fuse. They've said they're on the bottom shelf. Oh, great, there's like 10 shelves. So I have to just sort of walk, walk along slowly whilst looking at the bottom shelf and then click on the fuse once I find it. And there's a little bit too much of that going on where it's sort of like, find the thing. Okay, I'll go and find the thing again. But it's kind of pulling me in enough along that if I just did a quick Google search to find out if I have to do all of this stuff, or actually if there is like a main path that I can just hit through without having to bounce around a small map three or four times. I can just go to point A, point B, point C, and I'm done instead. I think that would pull me through enough because the narrative is caught me enough to want to see what is happening and what's going on. I think there's a section, the game starts out with you on a boat and you do some, you know, boaty things. So you have to raise and lower the sails based upon what's actually happening weather-wise. You have to turn into the waves as they're kind of coming to you. Like, it actually wants you to have a good mechanic there in actually navigating and using the boat, even though you're not necessarily taking the boat from point A to point B. I think, at least in the opening, it's much more of a, you're just on this boat and you're just sailing through for the experience of it. Actually, it was a good experience and quite a gripping experience because the storm builds around you and you have to start, you know, the characters panicking, at least in their voice, and you then slightly panic and go, oh, I've got to click this and I've got to do this and I've got to do that. So it builds on that really, really well. It looks good, but it's got that little bit of jank to it. that again, the little bit of jank and the bouncing around the slightly larger areas just turns me off a little. So I won't talk much more about it because I haven't experienced a huge amount. You know, it's an hour and a half of the sort of first two areas really that I've covered. So I'll probably talk about it in a couple of weeks' time again when I've had a little bit more time, just to see if I, you know, if I play another hour and actually the next area makes me bounce around too much, then I will bounce off it. You know, it's not that gripping that if I keep coming up to this repeated issue that I'm not enjoying, then I will just sort of stop playing. But as a start, it's all right. I just need to know if I don't have to do, like, take these pencils to this girl. I'm like, cool. And you take them to the girl and the girl isn't there anymore. And the man's like, there was never a girl here. Like, no, there definitely was. I'm not going insane. Like, the character's not going mad. I've not had any of those things.
Yeah.
So, okay. Yes, it's interesting. It's interesting.
What was it called again? My brain
it's called Will Follow the Light.
Follow the Light. That's what I couldn't. I was like, I typed in Will on Steam just to like see what it looks like. And I was like, well, that won't help. That's way too generic of a term to just have.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, the Steam page looks good as well. Like, you can see how atmospheric sort of it can get. You know, when all the lights went out, when the power cut, it was pitch black. I was like, I can't actually, you know, I can't navigate my way through the space that I've just been in. And it's like, take the lantern. I'm like, cool, I absolutely need this lantern. And when you step outside, there's that little bit of light because it's not pitch black outside, because there's, you know, the moon is coming through the clouds very slightly, and so it deals with atmosphere really, really well. And it looks, in certain aspects, looks fantastic. So yeah, there's enough there to just want me to jump back in. But other games have pulled me away from wanting to spend more time with it, like Marathon, which I'm just playing a lot of at the moment and stuff. So I will give it some more time. But
I will resurrect an old segment called Review Roundup.
Ooh, nice.
And I'll just read two. So this is Rain at Last, 5.8 hours. If the game gets better as I get closer to finishing, I'll change my review, but I hate it now just for the tedious and annoying sailing mechanics. And then Oobleck. Honestly, the game is not what I expected at all. The game and gameplay and puzzles are disjointed and make no sense. The story is quite lame, and we got teased with a lot of locations on a map that we never got to visit.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, not a sailing game, despite the mechanics all being there and woefully underused. On rails, Walker, no real gameplay. It's a mixtape. Yeah, so it seems like
mixtape the
similar.
Game.
Hmm?
But not mixtape the game.
Yes, which I
I need to get that
to my list. Yeah. Seems like seems like a perfect plane game. God, I love the Steam Deck.
Yes,
it's so good.
It would be. Yeah.
Especially now that you have some charging in planes. Not enough to, like... Usually you don't have enough juice if you're, like, running a graphically intensive game, but it slows down the battery drain, and then you're like, okay, I'll just, like, turn it off, leave it plugged in, watch a movie. Oh, 40%. Watch another movie.
I've been playing a game on Steam Deck which doesn't need a lot of juice. It's called Time Flies. Game by Playables Black and White, what would you...
Oh, it's cute.
I guess it's a puzzle game. Yeah, it's really cute. You basically play as a fly, and in the starter menu, you basically pick which country you're from. You can pick any, but obviously mine defaults set to UK, and it basically shows you the average life of a human in that country. So if it's like, I don't know, Japan, it's like 85 or something like that. And, you know, I don't know, Indonesia, it's 71 or something. You can play as anyone you want, but it's basically you have that many seconds to complete like this bucket list and as this fly. And you know, there's some play on words, there's some punny things, there's some, you know, sort of some, you know, just really like there's one where it's like travel the world, and it's basically you land on this globe,
nice,
and you
yeah.
just rotate the globe, and it's
that's
like
really cute.
Travel the world ticked off and stuff like that. So yeah, it's set into like four different chapters. You have a bucket list in each, and yeah, it just gets like really creative with those kind of things, and it's like, okay, you're having to fly through these rooms and like pick the optimal path so you can basically tick them all off within like the 80 seconds your fly is alive for. Really charming, really, really clever. And yeah, it took me about an hour and a half to finish, get all the achievements. And yeah, it's just a perfect little experience. Because Playable's previous games are just like kind of like weird, trippy kind of, I'd say they're more experiences than like puzzle games as such.
Yeah, is it kids?
Yeah, stuff like that where it's like, what am I doing? It's just a horde of people running around naked, the little blob people, and it's like, what is this? What is the point of this? Whereas this has, you know, a definite like kind of you know, objective to the level. So yeah, it's I recommend it to people. It's just a cute little thing.
Nice.
Very clever.
Does it with the objectives that you have, do you have to hit a certain amount of them before you're allowed to move into the next sort of
You have to tick them all off. So
right.
Per level there's probably about 10. And yeah, it's like in every life that you get, you may discover one thing or two things. There's like, you know, different things to interact with as the fly. Some things, you know, don't exactly tick things off the bucket list. Sometimes you're just finding collectibles in the world. So you probably need maybe about 5 to 12, let's say, okay. Different goes of each level. And it's like, once you know where everything is and what to interact with, it's like, oh, okay, I can confidently tick all of these off within the 80 seconds. It's not challenging. Like, it's yeah. like, oh, I need to be like, you know, Super Meat Boy kind of time precise kind of movements. It's just, yeah, you're just this little fly buzzing about. So it's just, yeah, it's more about discovery and
nice. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, seeing all the things tick off. But yeah, it's really good.
You've got this sort of very short window, like just over a minute, mm-hmm. you know, minute and 10,
yeah.
15
it's
seconds.
It's like that game, Minute. It's yes. kind of, yeah, it's like that, yeah.
Do you have any, so if you've got to do these sort of, you know, 8 to 10 objectives, mm-hmm. I assume hitting the objective is quite a swift thing. So you can kind of do the thing and then move on really quickly. It's not, you've got to watch something play out.
The time pauses when you're interacting with the bucket list thing. And yeah, sometimes they do like speed it up mm-hmm. in each time. Like, say, okay, there's one where it's like, make your mark. And it's, you're just going on like a welcome mat and ruffling up like the bristles. The first time you have to do it, you have to ruffle up like quite a few of them for the thing to check off. The next time you do it, you only have to ruffle a little bit and it checks off really quickly, stuff like that. But yeah, the time pauses when you're interacting with the thing. So it's usually really only your travel time in between the bucket list items that counts. And there's ways that you can like literally go on a clock and rewind time and give yourself a bit more time.
Nice.
But yeah, it's good.
What does the do you remember, what does the UK get? 75?
No, it's 80.1, I think.
Wow.
Okay. Yeah. It's quite, I looked at like all the different countries. It looked quite high.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
For now.
Yeah, before the NHS gets sold off, and then we can't even afford to, you know,
turn into the United
treat
States.
An ingrown toenail that turns septic.
Yes,
but hopefully those days are far away.
Yeah, once the old people can no longer give useful data to Palantir, they'll just be juiced.
I welcome like the Matrix, man. Just give me my steak and leave me alone. Yeah,
the problem is they're not going to give us the Matrix, right?
Aww.
They're going to give us poverty
know too much.
and TikTok in your glasses that you have to wear, because if you don't wear them, then the government won't let you access the internet, but you can't do your job without the internet.
Exactly.
Can I scoop my eyes out?
Yeah.
I mean, you can, but you won't get any benefits for it.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh no!
Yes, yes. How can you see all the adverts unless you're wearing the glasses?
I don't want to. I turn off all the time.
How can you read the government-approved media that apparently only kids will only have access to if you don't have eyes?
Yes, yes. Just the BBC. That's all
they're
allowed to look at.
Apparently.
Yeah.
Right. I've played another game.
Okay.
Oh, excellent.
Yeah. Been on a roll. I've played a game called World Light, No Time to Trip. Now, anyone who's hasn't played Lucy Bingo in a while, can anyone guess what kind of genre this video game is without looking it up on Steam?
Do you point and do you click?
Yes, you do.
Oh, that's good.
At the same time?
And points.
Yeah.
Hey, this is on my wish list.
Oh, is it? Good. This is from Imaginary Lab, who made Willy Morgan and the Curse of Bonetown, which is like the best name for a video game ever.
Oh, I remember
which
looking
I played
at this
several years ago. Yeah.
Did you play a demo for this or something?
Yes, I did.
Right.
Probably about maybe over a year ago, and I talked about it briefly then.
Yes.
Yeah. I may have got it on sale at some point.
Oh, okay.
Willy Morgan in Bonetown is my is in my library.
Very, very good. That's a Steam Deck playing game.
Yeah.
Yeah, although, probably from my recommendation.
Yeah, older point and clicks can be mildly frustrating if the control scheme is not perfect.
Yeah, I agree.
Because if they have, like, if they're designed for a screen and high enough resolution, like, hitboxes, then you can't just use the touch screen because you won't get the pixels right.
Yeah.
So you have to use the cursor, which, if it's not, like, well optimized, like, luckily, you know, someone's played this game and given the refined controls.
Yeah.
Which is one of the best, like, if you have a Steam Deck and you haven't, and you're like, oh, this game kind of controls wonky, go into the store, the community page of that, and go into the community controls, and there's going to be three different versions of a way better, like, control schema.
Mm. Yeah,
you
agreed.
Don't have to think, you can outsource to the crowd. God, I love saying that in 2026. But yeah, sorry, you were saying.
No, it's all right. Fortunately, this one is just out of the box, ready to go on like Steam Deck. You know, you can use the cursor and you don't have to pixel hunt. You can just highlight the B button on the Steam Deck and it shows you all the interactive points. Instead of, you know, pixel hunting and all that. And yeah, it controls well. Like you can like double press so that the character moves quicker. Or if you just want to go to the next screen, like just double click the arrow to that and it'll just automatically take you there. And I've only played Act 1 and a bit of Act 2, but in Act 1, you can basically get this map. And if you open up the map and you just click on the map where you want to go, it just takes you there immediately instead of clicking through multiple screens. So there are a lot of quality of life aspects in this, which is good. I mean, it's 2026, we should be putting these kinds of things in point and click games at this point, and it does, so credit where it's due.
Can you tell us just a bit of like the premise?
Yeah, you're basically it's quite cliche, and you know, probably intentionally, like this is, it's a point and click adventure game. These games, like, they lean into the humor. You're basically this like inventor, what's his name, Hector May, and he's, you know, down on his luck, he's broke. He's trying to invent these things that, you know, just aren't, no one would have any need for them. He's basically what would have been his claim to fame, his like apprentice basically stole it and, you know, filed the patent just under his name, and he's becoming famous for it. And it's about this, you know, down on his luck, kind of old timer inventor, basically trying, well, the first act is you trying to steal back your invention. And the invention basically, maybe unintentionally, or intentionally, not quite sure at this moment, like, can make you travel through time. So there's a lot of like things to do with time warping and stuff in this game, which is great. I like that. You know, stuff like the cave from Double Fine, like that had like a section in it where it was time jumping and stuff like that. So, and you know, you got like Day of the Tentacle, and you know, which is all about, you know, time travel. So, I'll be interested to see what it does with that, if it reuses like, you know, similar scenes and similar areas from, you know, previous sections and does something different. I've only just like traveled through time like the one time, because I'm only in Act 2, so it's like still early on, so I'm interested in where that goes. In terms of the puzzles, it is your typical point and click fare, like you know, combining items in the inventory, and you know, making stupid weird contraptions and stuff. Do have my criticisms though.
Okay.
Where, I mean, the game looks great. The animation's really good. It's like what the, it looks like what the 2000s kind of like jump into 3D. I think that's what they wanted it to look like.
Right.
Whereas like now, you know, we've actually been able to attain that. Back then it was just very clunky and ugly. Whereas this is like really good looking. Like the backgrounds are all really nice. It's and detailed. It's sort of like that kind of not quite Neverhood claymation look, but
they actually have depth to them rather than a rendered matte like backdrop, or like in film you have the like really pretty backdrops that are clearly a matte painting. Yeah. Right? This just even the screenshots, it looks like I'm looking at the one where you're walking through a brightly lit town on with water in the front foreground, and like the buildings look pretty layered.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Which I'm guessing that like because you're only really like moving in a plane, et cetera, they're probably rendering the actual 3D space. You just can't access it, which makes it look better.
Yeah, it looks really nice. That like kind of Italian Riviera town that you're in at the start, it looks really nice. Graphics, animation, the look of it is really good, but it feels empty. And I say that because when you're interacting with the few townspeople that there are, it's like the only dialogue that you have with them relates to the puzzles. Whereas this is what makes a like point-and-click adventure like top tier, where you have just tons of dialogue, not leading to anything, just set dressing kind of dialogue and just quips and jokes and everything like that. And I think that's what separates a lot of point-and-clicks now with the ones that are really lauded and really good. Like I played The Drifter, I think that was earlier this year, at the start of this year. And it's like, not only in the sense of like it's building atmosphere, talking to these like side characters, and there's dialogue trees outside of the puzzles that you're meant to be doing. So not only for like building up, the atmosphere and the story and stuff like that, but it also helps with the puzzles when it's like, okay, I'm going to use this item on this person and it's or this object, and either the character or, the side character, they're just like, no, or that's not right, or this and that. And it's like, there's no suggestion of like, oh, maybe that wouldn't work here, but maybe I do something else. Yeah, there's no hints or anything, and there's no inbuilt hint system to the game.
Okay.
So unless you're like, your brain is like irreparably damaged like mine is, and you know how these point and clicks work, and you're just like, oh, I need to put the pulley on the rubber chicken, because of course you do. You're just going to be stuck. There's no, like, direction. There's no, this character is giving me this hint, or the character is having an inner monologue and saying, oh, that might not work, but actually, maybe if I do this or something similar, you know what
Which,
I mean?
Given that they have the way more, like, the capacity and, like, have a bunch of voice acting, that just seems like such an obvious miss, because in the old games, they couldn't load that much stuff, so they didn't
do it as often. There's only so much space on the disc. but that's the most disappointing thing. It makes the world feel not alive when you got such such detailed background and stuff like that, but everything feels like it's got a sense of hollowness to it, where it's like this town looks alive, but it's not actually alive with people conversing and stuff like that. It's like you do the puzzle and it's like they have nothing else to say. They have nothing else to comment on or anything like that, and that's really disappointing, because it's, as I say, like playing something like The Drifter earlier this year, where everything, you use any item on anything, maybe one or two things the main character's going to be like, no, that's not right, that doesn't work, but it's literally on everything in this game. It's like there's no alternative dialogue for anything, and that's really disappointing.
Like they didn't learn. It's like they're still playing like, or basing their game off of what can we do to improve on Day of the Tentacle, rather than what are point and click. What is the genre doing now, and what can we do that's interesting in the space? Yeah,
but back then it's like you put the wrong. You speak to people, or you put the wrong object on. Wrong thing, and there's dialogue around it, and there's hints and clues as to like, no, that's not right, but maybe nudge you in this direction.
They're actually worse than
Yeah. And it's like, I get it, like, there's budget and stuff like that, but, and this has voice acting in it, so there's only so much, you know, on a budget, how many lines you can get people to record.
Yeah.
But still, it's like, it seems like if you were, like, new to point and clicks and stuff like that, you may struggle, and you may
get frustrated.
And they
might turn you off the genre as a result, because it's so, such a wall.
Yeah, because it's like, okay, you know, even me, I'm just like, I assume this will work. Why is the character not doing it? And, or even when I can sense that I'm on the right track, but I may just be missing one component or something, the character's not giving me any feedback at all. It's like, I'm having to just go through it by attrition rather than feeling smart because the character, you know, just nudge me in a direction. Yeah, there's no nudging, there's no hint system in this.
And if it's the same dialogue options each time, then as you, it makes it very clear that you're banging your head against the wall. She's like,
yes.
They're saying no again. They're saying,
yes.
Not even like, even if it was just the same dialogue option, but it was a neutral thing, you would still be like, oh, that dialogue option. But the fact that they're also telling you no, it's like compounds it.
Like, I'm an idiot. Yeah.
I know. Please let me find the thing so I can shut your face.
Yeah. That's really disappointing. And this game's got good reviews so far, but it's like, and for obviously from people who are, you know, maybe of my vintage and like those old school point and click games. And I don't see what they're seeing, like, because that, I think, I don't know if it's just a me thing, but that's what turns a good point and click adventure game, which this is. It's got a lot of good qualities to it. Like, the puzzles are fun, the environments are great, the voice acting's great, and everything like that. But turning something from a good or okay point and click adventure into, like, yes, I will remember this.
Yeah.
It are those little details. I can't remember if William the Curse of Bone Town had more dialogue and stuff like that. I can't remember, but this doesn't, and that's disappointing, for sure.
I'm gonna review round up this. There's a shortish one, and then So this is Soraya. This game's 9.3 hours on record. This game starts out fun and pretty innocently through the first two chapters until the end of chapter two. After that, it gets pretty dark, where you have a sect that worships demons that you have to interact with to progress. Yeah. That's where I stopped playing. Unfortunately, I'm not able to get a refund because I have gone beyond my 2 hours of playtime. If you don't mind dealing with dark content, then go for it.
I mean, everyone has their limit. But, you know.
I read this because I'm like, nothing about Lucy said it was super dark. I'm sure this is just someone who's like, demon shit's not their cup of tea. It's just such a lovely, innocent review.
Fair.
Also, I will say, it only has 116 reviews, and 7 of which are negative.
Well, that's good. Yeah,
so
I know.
Like, in the vein of your saying, a lot of people like this, but I'm not going to read this whole thing because it's long, but I will read some highlights. This is Capella Origa. I wanted to like this, but as a native English speaker, it was so obvious to me that the game was developed by people whose first language isn't English. The developers are Italian. And the script really needed to have been run past an English native speaker. I wish I'd made notes of specific examples, but there were too many. This meant I was unable to engage with the characters because of their way of speaking was so jarring to my English ears that any jokes completely fell flat. The constant references to Monkey Island serve no purpose. They certainly weren't funny if they were supposed to be. Now the historical inaccuracies. And then I will only read a couple. Queen Victoria wasn't a British monarch in 1815. Blah, 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 blah. The Berlin Wall fell in 1989, so there's no way that Pink Floyd could have been playing behind it in July 1990. Barbers in the UK in the early 19th century didn't have red, white, and blue striped poles. That's very much a modern thing.
Yeah, I did notice the Berlin Wall thing.
Yeah, vacation is an Americanism. No T-Rex fossils have ever been found encased in ice because none have ever been found that far north or south.
It's a which video is, game.
Yeah, and they address that in their comments. They're like, people yeah. So this is really funny because as soon as they're the line after the T-Rex, people are going to say it's only a game. But if you're going to develop a game based on history, even a sci-fi fantasy game, then you have to make history accurate, or people are going to notice.
You see, I noticed the Berlin Wall thing. I was just like, whatever.
Well, we know like the wall, right? It just
yeah.
Did they play behind the wall or at the?
The thing is that he's gone through time. He came from 1962, yeah. And it's now 1990 in the future. And sure. It's like, you know, there's a computer and a floppy yeah. disk, and you know, it's 1990 Pink Floyd. And yeah. He's like, "Who's Pink Floyd?" It's like, it doesn't matter. I did yeah. notice, like,
I just
because I was born in 1990, so I was like, "Hold on, there's a time." Oh, yeah. Just, but yeah, so I was just like, it didn't matter to me.
Yeah. So I just wanted to, like, I just enjoyed these long screeds. Like, mm-hmm. the fact that it brings up, like, an anti-English as a second language thing.
Yeah, at but the it's start, like, it's just like, you can man. Tell there's like, a bit stilted things at times, but overall, it's not that big of a deal, yeah. to be mm-hmm. honest. You know, it's not overly noticeable and jarring, yeah. in my opinion.
I basically wanted to read this because it was like a screed-ish with mild like racism, but also because like I kind of agree that if there's this many inaccuracies that could easily be found on Wikipedia, that's sloppy. Fully agree. Does it really change the game? Only if you're already pissed that they don't sound English enough. I think. Right. Like.
Yeah. It's. It's one of those where it's just like it's just yeah, there's time travel, but it doesn't really matter. Like it's a comedic point and click game. It's like there are games where it's like, oh, this is set in like historical times, and there's yeah. like T-Rexes walking around where there's humans are, and it's like that didn't happen. Does it matter? Yeah. Absolutely.
Oh yeah.
Definitely not. Mm-hmm. You know, because it's just so superfluous to anything yeah. else that's going on. So yeah.
But I kind of yeah. that's why I sort of what I found interesting where it was like, of the 7 bad reviews, there was the like, secret demon content. My Christian ass is out, presumably. Yeah. And then there was this idiot. And then the only other ones that show up are basically like, just didn't really click with me. So like. It vibes with what you're saying, although I was hoping to find like something in those to like the missing piece.
Where, yeah, the middle. Like, I don't yeah, know yeah. why
people dislike this or like this, mm-hmm. given that like you're not in the this is great. You're like this is good, but I think probably the thing is it's good.
Yeah, because people will say it's good. Very it's positive. Yeah, it's not yeah. overwhelmingly positive. Yeah. It's very positive. Yeah. So yeah, it's exactly that. And I think it's probably the people who like point and click adventure games and have lived through the ups and downs of that genre. Sure. Probably will forgive it for like its less than friendly like no hint system and like kind of lack of direction. You know, for people who are like quote unquote veterans, that sounds lame, but you know, veterans yeah. of the genre rather than people who are just hopping in. So yeah, I think like I'm more forgiving of that because it's like I'm still looking forward to playing it and just like being like, yeah. You know, if I have to look up for a walkthrough, then I will. But it's a case of like, I haven't needed to because as I say, my brain is just broken enough and I'm stubborn enough to like click on everything and just get through there from process of elimination and just banging my head against things and being like, oh yeah, like someone else might think that's absolutely ridiculous. Why would I ever think of that? And that, and I'm just someone who's like, oh, why didn't I think of that? My brain is broken in a specific way. I know where wall chickens are in a Metroidvania and I know how point and clicks are very esoteric in that way, and that's how, those are the games.
That's it. When you know, when you haven't got it after a couple of times, and you're getting annoyed by the repeated dialogue, Lucy.
Yeah.
That's a you problem.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like What am I missing? I thought I was broken. Clearly not as broken as I think.
I'm not broken enough. This is the worst of both possible worlds.
Oh, but yeah, good. Really enjoy it. Put on your wish list along with Bone Town.
Yeah, that is one of the best named video games in existence.
It really is, isn't it?
Yeah.
This one less memorable, but you know, if I just call it the sequel ish, it's not really a sequel, a completely different story. But yeah, if I just call it by the people who made the Bone Town.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it is one of those things where like it's what, 17 quid on the Steam. Okay. But because I own Bone Town, it means that it's $15.29 because I can buy the bundle.
The bundle, yeah.
Steam gets me often with these. Well, you own two parts of this, so actually, it's just cheaper than full price if you buy the bundle, which you own parts of, because we'll discount the bundle.
It's really great, you know, like it's insidious, but great at the same time. It's so anti but pro consumer at the same time, because it's just like you're enticing me to spend more. Because I would have just been like, no, absolutely not. I'm not buying it at this point. I'll buy everything when it's more on sale. And it's like, but you own this game, so you can get it slightly cheaper than the introductory sale.
The trick is like, oh, okay, so the bundle discount is 10% for Bone Town and World Light. So they take the $15.49 off, and I'm just getting 10% off of World Light. That's not a lot.
Mm-hmm.
So like this one's already on my wish list. I might leave it on the wish list because I have a backlog. To be honest, I agree. What I should do is play Bone Town.
Yeah.
Like this is my reminder to play Bone Town, not to buy another game.
Sounds like the kind of place Guy Fieri lives. But I know that's Flavor Town, isn't it? I know that's Flavor Town.
Well, that's when he's at work. Bone Town is when he's at home.
Yeah. Adil, is there anything you wanted to chat about this week?
I mean, there were two things. One, I'm still playing that anime gacha game.
Nice. Yep.
Did they do the update?
Hmm?
Or have they done the update yet?
Yeah, so they've updated. So there's a new character coming out this coming week.
Okay.
It's the first limited edition male character, and of course all the fucking waifu weebs are like, I'm not going to waste my currency on this guy. And then all the people in the Chinese server who have got it before is like, he's a really good DPS. I'm like, I don't care. This is my waifu game. I'm like, what? Why am I playing this game? I swear I'm not waifuing. I like don't go to the apartments, because when you go to the apartments, your characters who are in the apartments are in their loungewear, and I find that weird.
Oh.
Yeah, it's bad. Like, but also I get to like pseudo GTA, and I'm done all the story. This might be new story in this new update coming, but like I'm actually having fun learning how to play. There's like an intricate battle system, and the end game content is basically grinding like end game levels, and then every couple weeks they reset, and I'm like, that probably will last me the summer if the story is as slow, it's like a short or slow, I might stop caring as much about like checking in every day, which is what they want, right?
Yeah.
Because I don't. So part of me wants to get all the characters, right? Because that's like the completionist, the autistic brain, the way gacha games work. But like, I'm still into the story, but one thing they've shown is that like beating the story missions is not where you need the high level characters. So like, if I get bored with the events and all that crap, or like there's not as much to do in the city because I've done enough stuff, although fishing mini games always get me. I can just, like, you know, every once in a while, like, when a new update comes out, play through the story if it still interests me. And, like, that actually is kind of great, and probably one of the reasons I'm still kind of even doing some of the more grindier bits, just in case I'm, like, more interested than I think and there's a cool character coming up, right? But, like, it's... I already can feel the like, Now that I've done a lot of the stuff that they built in to give you all the currencies and stuff, that's also activities. And I'm like, okay, so they're drying up. So unless I want to do a lot of online racing, I'm not sure. Like, yeah, I can feel the like pull going away, which is great because I don't want to be addicted to it. And it was free. So like, great, right? But I do like the storyline. I do like the world. And it's the tension of this style of game where at some point they want you to be the game is incentivizing grinding, and at some point that'll annoy me more than interest in the story. My like one green flag is it seems like I could just come back later and play through some of the story, and I'd probably be able to beat those levels because like they weren't that hard. Maybe that'll scale up, and if that case, fine. And then it's like, okay, so you've scaled me out of the game. I can't even follow your plot. I'm gone. But I could do that without spending money or caring about leveling all the characters to whatever the new level cap is and all that garbage. But it's, right now it's still like servicing my like, 40 minutes a day. I like fuck around, but some days it's just the 10, 15 minutes it takes me to do dailies. But usually that is enough for me to be like, well, let's like get on the motorbike.
Yeah,
and then like one of the new characters, you could turn into a bat, so you could fly.
Nice.
But it's tied to your stamina meter, so you can't fly that much.
So it's basically symphony.
So, but that means you can explore in different places than you could before. So I'm like, oh, that's kind of cool. Let me see if I missed shit.
Yeah.
What the city looks like.
Doing the exploring also, thing that you were doing previously that you really enjoyed. Just another way to kind of get about.
Yeah, and I think that was the shift that happened earlier this week, where it's like, oh, I've because of the optimization brain, I've been like logging on to make, well, if I'm going to log on, I might as well do all this like stuff that is less fun.
Mm.
And then I'm like, okay, I'm bored of the game, and I'm putting away, like, oh, actually, let me start with, do I want to play the game? What do I want to do? And then intermittent with that, I'll do these like minimal dailies so that like I get some of these currencies, but I don't care enough. Like, it's again, because I'm not trying to waifu collect, I'm just like finishing mechanics. If there's a character that comes up and I don't have all of the magic currency to guarantee I get them, even though the game has a reasonable forgiving system on that, great, fine, I don't get that character.
Mm-hmm.
And actually, part of the thing is trying to do the end game content. It's like, oh, you need a cohesive team. I've got a reasonably strong team with one slightly lower caliber character than like the top meta. I'm sure that will, if I like continue just playing that one team for a bit, I'll be fine to like not beat all the high levels of end game content, but like get through it.
Yeah,
that's all I want. And like as soon as I get bored with that, cool, I've got a shit ton of games. But I've realized is it's made me reinterested in games, and so I've started other games.
Nice.
You need that gateway drug then sometimes.
Yeah. Sometimes you just need the one to remind you why you like video games.
Yeah.
And actually, that's why I'm like, I might actually go to Bone Town later tonight.
That's definitely a euphemism.
Yeah. Because
I will not accept what you're talking about.
I was like, oh, I want to play another game. And I like the anime RPG plot of this game. And so it's like, oh, maybe I'll start an RPG. I'm like, oh, no, that's the... Actually, I want to contrast it with a different genre of
game.
Yeah.
Otherwise, I'll just get like a little burnt out. So I'm like, oh, let me play something smaller. And I was thinking of Blueprints, but I think I might go to Bone Town instead.
Whatever it takes. Yeah, like that Walk the Frog game that we were talking about, Ben, a few weeks ago. That was my gateway because it was like, this is so simple. It's a nice little puzzle game. It took like 2 hours. And yeah, it's just what eased me back in. Nice. You need that. Cool. Like, cool. I need that so often because I looked at the calendar and I was like, oh, the last time I finished a game was like in March. Yeah.
Maybe. I don't know.
Like March. And I was just like, man, I haven't played anything for 2 months. And then, playing Walk the Frog, and I got back into that Call of the Elder Gods game that I finished. And yeah, you just need that first domino to fall sometimes.
Definitely. Mm-hmm. Nice. Adele, you mentioned you had two things.
Oh, it's just Lizzie mentioned Double Fine, and I think we got to at least be like, Xbox layoffs. If you don't know, read some articles. I'm not too tired to talk about it. But like, Double Fine and Ninja Theory are both basically on the chopping block. With Asha Sharma's reorg stuff coming as a shock to most people, especially given that the last Xbox Direct was showing off upcoming games by both of those studios.
Yeah, Nisanua game.
And it turns out that reliable sources are saying the reason why those games were shown off was because they were hoping to drum up excitement for buyers for the studios. But either way, that's incredibly heartless because the people who worked there did not know this was coming.
Yep.
And you advertised this as like a thing you're bragging the new version of Xbox was going to look like this stuff. And that's just so fucking infuriating. And so I just have to at least say that much. Because the rest is just the usual.
It's vile.
What the balls, guys.
Yeah, we seem to have, or at least for the first half of the year, got away from. There's been layoffs, of course there have. But this year hasn't seemed as bad as last year yet. But perhaps that's because there are things to come. There's also talk of PlayStation laying off a bunch of Bungie as well. Mm-hmm. So it's not just limited to Xbox necessarily. That potentially there's going to be, you know, over the summer a reasonable amount of layoffs coming to studios under the bigger platform holders and things. And
Ubisoft as well.
Yeah, Ubisoft. Yeah, they've just had a bunch, haven't they? So they've just closed a few studios, about 450-ish people, something like that. It's games are a wild, wild place for employment, and I know, as we've talked about before, there is a level of being a bit of a freelancer and bopping around a little bit and that kind of stuff. But some of these people will have been employed with, you know, some of these studios for years and years, thinking that great, this big, you know, publisher has come in and bought us, and we've got, you know, again, we can make some fun little games and not worry about the overheads, not worry about the return, and just get some cool games out. But nah.
So like this is the thing where the big studios have been doing like post-launch churn layoffs for a while. And acquisition by Microsoft, right, or Sony, of the place you work, I think most people saw that as job security, but it is the opposite, right? So they're so big, they do post-launch layoffs at the studio level, right? So they just burn the studio to the ground instead of laying off like half the people. And the problem is the studio no longer has the means to be itself in the way that it used to be, because one of the first things they do when they absorb them is they take out all the redundant stuff. So it's not like Bungie could somehow, even if they had the money, they don't have like the institution anymore, right? They aren't a self-contained unit. Every time you get acquired, you just like get rid of all of the stuff that we can do. And now it's like, well, even if we wanted to spin ourselves out, it will take so long for us to figure out how to be a company again, right? It's so shitty and heartless and short-sighted, and also just we're so big we don't have to own our mistakes, because like this is entirely because Microsoft over-leveraged its acquisition for years, especially when they got all the way to Activision Blizzard, and then they said, hey, all you studios that we've bought, make small stuff because Game Pass is the way that we're going to do things. And then now they've decided they need more tentpole pure profit makers.
Yeah.
So Game Pass was a bad idea.
Yeah.
And no one at the brass gets fired. Instead, we literally just liquidate the studios as if it was firing 17 people.
Yeah.
In the same way that was heartless before. And it's like, well, but like they just did what you were asking. And a lot of these were exactly what you wanted. But like, I mean, as we saw with the critically acclaimed, like actual sales success, 2 months later, close the studio, doesn't matter. It's like, I hope is, like, it's so brazen. I really hope this affects how people view acquisition in the future.
Absolutely.
I think it has and will continue,
like,
to do
capitalism so. In 2026 is no longer, isn't even wearing a scarf, let alone a mask, right? Like, it's so obvious.
Yeah, and it's just like, you know, unless we can churn insane amounts of money from these games, you're just not worth anything to us. You know,
it's not even money, infinite it's growth. Enough money.
Yeah, it's infinite and growth. It's like, these games can even do well enough to recoup their development costs and maybe even profit. But if it's not immense amounts of profit, you know, good. May I indulge and read an excerpt from what I wrote on my Substack about, because I wrote about Keeper last year, which was Double Fine game about the Lighthouse. I wasn't much of a fan, so I'll just start it from here. But I don't think Keeper is anything special. I'm glad that in this industry that's increasingly suffering at the hands of corporate greed, average games like Keeper can exist. I'm of the belief that Microsoft won't shut a Double Fine, in brackets, yet, because it will be a PR nightmare, but are lying in wait for the opportunity. And if I were a hard-nosed Microsoft accountant, Keeper would be the type of game I'd reference when sliding everyone at Double Fine, their P45s or the American equivalent. Perhaps Keeper being on Game Pass is extra armor and protection against Microsoft's financial eye of Sauron, in addition to Double Fine status as an indie darling. I hope they remain bulletproof, as they are too much of a creative beacon to be snuffed out in favor of a shareholder being able to redecorate their yacht. So whilst I don't agree with many outlets saying Keeper is a cult classic material, it's not good or memorable enough to be in my opinion, I'm glad they're vouching for it so that the payroll at Double Fine remains nothing more than a rounding error for the money men at Xbox and Microsoft. And here we are. It's not a surprise to me.
It's not. No, I don't think Kill Sad, did but... very well. Did it? Still finds games that Sony just come out last couple of months. But whether we expected it I think I almost heard nothing about it until post-release, really.
Mm-hmm.
So, again, is this something that's been in the kind of on the grapevine, in the works for a little bit in the higher ups? And, you know, maybe, I don't know whether it's just, you know, we're not tied or dialed into the advertisement sort of places that something like Kiln would have been pushed to, although I would disagree.
It just felt like a holdover game till Psychonauts 3. That's what it felt like to me. I think Double Fine, I mean, there is an argument to be had. It's like, would Double Fine exist at this point if they weren't bought by Microsoft? Potentially not, because we've all seen those documentaries and how hard it was to get, you know, funding, and it did seem like they were on the ropes back before they were acquired, I think in 2019 or something like that. So there's an argument to be had, would they be around? But you would have thought that they had the guarantee that they're just there to make creative little things that keep Game Pass stocked up.
Yeah.
Before having their quote-unquote tentpole kind of thing that they're known for, which is Psychonauts. Even though I don't think those games have ever historically sold well either.
No, they've been critical darlings, but not like...
But not. Which seemed like the thing. It's like, okay, you be the critical thing that gives Microsoft this luster of like, we care about art and creativity, whilst, I don't know, the Gears team are like, you make the system sellers, please. But after they've just messed everything up and having such an unclear direction, nothing's a system seller anymore for them. So it's like, yeah, they've just botched everything up. The whole industry's a mess, to be honest. It's just like depressing. Just because I don't care if Xbox went under tomorrow, I wouldn't give a damn. You just feel sorry for like the collateral, the people actually
thousands and thousands of people.
It's like Xbox is a brand, brands come and go, empires fall, who the f cares, you know? They could be not here tomorrow, wouldn't give a damn. But it's just like, why? Because of your decisions, like at the top, which has, you know, been rotten for a while. Like, I think the only thing that Phil Spencer probably did was just actually create a buffer in between, you know, the whole thing just completely going south, you know, because, I mean, whatever his decisions as a leader, the guy loved games and cared about games, and I think you can extend that to he probably liked the studios who were making the games and the people who made the games. Whereas you get someone in who, I don't, it doesn't matter that, you know, Sharma's not a gamer, who cares at the end of the day, neither was Reggie. But it's like, I think having that, well, maybe it's business, maybe you're not meant to have any like emotion or ties to business, but I feel like someone who likes games and plays games would have had at least knowledge that it's wrong. It's like there's like a sin to closing Double Fine.
I mean, I will say, having, oh man, God, I'm so old. Sorry, I just realized. So, I mean, I worked in investment banking for a while, right? I was a financial analyst for a small investment firm. I was a big portfolio back in, 2003. That's why I was like, like, I worked in the investment firm when my students were being born, right?
Jesus,
like,
Christ.
That's why none of them can afford houses. It's all Bill's fault.
But like, what? So the like,
he shorted those stocks.
The firm was based in value investing, right? So this is the idea of you like evaluate the firm as and its current share and outstanding stock and how much you think it was worth. Like, if I wanted to buy this company, it's like, obviously there's like nuances to the math, but essentially, like, if I was to buy this company, how much would I pay? Is it growing? What's its market share like? What's its context? This is how much I would buy it for. Okay, how many stocks are there? What is the stock price? Is there a difference between that number and this number? Right? Stock price times shares outstanding, is that lower than what I think I would the company is worth, essentially, right? And that's like how Warren Buffett made all his money, right? That's the notion the stock market used to be. And then capital gains investing is, can I make money on trading this thing, right? The stock is a piece of paper.
Yep.
Not even, right? It's line items that if I can predict its variance on the second to millisecond, I can make money. The whole point of value investing, like, one thing is I learned in that job, and like I told them, hey, it's 2003. I think you should invest in this company called Google. And they were like,
never heard of them.
No, they were like, yeah, that sounds good, but we're not techie. We don't understand the market, and we don't invest in areas we don't understand.
Right.
And that is one of the reasons why we were very successful against like the indexes, right? I really respected that. I think it was wrong. I made a little money by investing on Google. I'm sad I got rid of that money, but I paid for the down payment of my first house, which I no longer own. right. But like that's the thing that I think the business class taking over everything is the bit that everything goes wrong on, because there's this notion that if you're good at business, it doesn't matter if you don't understand the product or the market, because someone will tell you the bits. But you actually need to know a lot more, right? This is why we get Sony pivoting to live service games and doubling down on them, even when things go wrong, right? Mm-hmm. And so that, coupled with the fact that the people who are good, who rise to the top of the business class, are less bright, I think. But like, they won't even admit the failures of the people before them in a tangible way. Because that might mean people would get mad at the golden parachute, and then they know in 5 years they want a parachute out as well. So if you read the press release of Asha Sharma, and I can't remember the chief
technology.
Yeah, thank you. There's a lot of interesting moments where they say, we tried this, we're doing this, blah, blah, blah.
It's always we at Microsoft. Who's to blame?
Yeah, but really? The way it sounds like the whole company made this decision. No, it's your predecessors, and you're doing similar things. It matters that you're making these mistakes. And like, my most anti-capitalist sentiment, I will say all the time, is I don't think capitalism needs to be this terrible. It's just the people in charge are so fucking bad at it, right? Like if they were,
that might be right.
If they were good at searching for profits and had even a medium, let alone long-term perspective, many of these companies would not be doing what they're doing. But they're not. They're being selfish people looking for their take, and they have an exit strategy in the short run. And as a result, all the companies are being run as a short run. But also, this is influenced by the fact that the stock market wants immediate growth because they think they can. And so with that perversion and the fact that the way you get ahead in business isn't staying in the same role for 10 years, if you can help it, means that all the incentives are to do dumb shit, blame other people, get out.
No, but that's what I was going to say. Like, yes, I do agree with you. Probably the higher you go up, the less they actually know. But how, in the pursuit of infinite growth, I think there comes a point where you just can't anymore. It's either, you know, I don't even think it's like, you know, you're asking people to do the impossible at a certain point, aren't you? And like, these could be the smartest people in the room, but when you're asking them to, you know, divide something by zero and get anything other than infinity, then what, you know, what's going on? Like, how can we even blame these people? Where everyone's like, the shareholders are the idiots, and they're like, I want more money. And then he's like, well, you can only have so much. And they're like, no, I want more money. Like, because they know that the economy is just, what is money? It's a false concept. So they can want more. But then in actual...
Well, even if it was a real thing, you could want more of a thing, right?
Yeah, but it's like, okay, I want more oil. Well, only so many creatures died a million years ago. What you can do? Get it from the moon. There's nothing on the moon. I don't care. Build the ship. And then they build the ship. There's no oil there. And they're like, what do you mean? We drilled the moon and Jupiter and there's nothing here. And it's like, well.
Lots of people died in the pursuit of this, but it's fine.
Yeah.
Just to cap this off, I think one of the things humans do really badly is conflate knowledge and understanding. And, and raw intelligence with ability, right? And I think they're twins, right? Because Akshay Sharma could be one of the smartest people in the world, but until she has the knowledge of the industry, and I mean the nitty gritty, she can't understand what it means to do this. Including the bad PR, like I'm sure she has someone telling her there's bad PR for closing Double Fine. Here's what we think we'll lose. It's still less than paying these 100 people, whatever. But like, to be a good leader of one of these companies, you need to know about the industry, and that knowledge can't be factual. It has to have some understanding underneath. I'm now conflating them in the way that I've just critiqued. But like, it's not enough to know facts, right? You need to know deeper than that. Yeah. And so you can't learn how an industry works or with just a fact sheet, right? You can't just learn from metrics. You have to understand how games work and the market of games. And like you said, someone who knew games intimately would know that like Double Fine has a specific place. And actually, what you do is you exploit that as a capitalist. You don't throw it away.
Actually, to go against in fact, it's probably in what I said, and I completely agree with you, but I think if I was, okay, how do we make money? I would just shut Double Fine. I would. Because it's like, they have not made a hit that has sold well in the 20, 25 years of being around. Most people do not know who they are. People like us do.
Yeah.
But we're not the people who are buying FIFA, let's say Spider-Man and whatever the tentpole Microsoft franchise is, let's say Halo.
Yeah, but those haven't sold well for many iterations. This is why their current pivot doesn't make sense. But anyway, sorry.
I agree. Like, who knows how that will turn out? I think they're going to go the way of EA, where it's like EA have what, a Star Wars maybe until that license runs out, and then a Battlefield, and then they got their sports games or whatever.
Yeah.
Or like 2K. They've got. Yeah.
And have
GTA,
multiple studios working on one experience.
Yeah, so that is what Microsoft said. They're pivoting. They're now going to
Gears and Halo.
Yeah,
and
right.
Forza. Yeah, and that's
not even perfect. But not even Forza, just Forza Horizon.
Not Forza,
because they have already pivoted away from Forza, because Horizon is more successful. Yeah.
Yes. Forza Horizon. Yeah, you're right. Yeah. Well, there you go.
Yeah. But I guess what I'm saying is, like, if you were trying to grow the company in the long run, you would. What you do is you hollow out the company so you can keep the badge, right?
I'll keep
you don't get
talent.
Rid of it because, sure. Like, the Double Fine has some indie merit, and you're right, though, they've squandered it enough, and the previous game plan didn't work. Maybe that's not worth it. Mm-hmm. But I don't know. It's like there's still a lot of institutional knowledge and expertise. Don't you just shove the people into a different place? Because
Activision did.
Yeah.
But anyway, I don't know enough about those details, and obviously I'm never destined to be a business capitalist for obvious reasons, I think, that have made apparent.
Yeah, you never know.
Just like,
you never know where things may take you.
These things are dumb, and I hate them, and this world sucks. And also, I'm sure part of this is that they think AI will help.
They absolutely do. That is definitely part of this.
Good. She's been like, let's get rid of AI from the anything Xbox. And
no, that's what
it's so strange.
Yeah, but what they mean, given how many video game companies have been caught with their pants down of, oh, these were placeholder assets. I'm like, you can use a fucking red tile for a placeholder asset. You're choosing to generate AI and then not track it.
Interest is there, but that's all AI know.
So. But like,
Jesus.
But what they mean is we don't want to get caught with AI assets. But also, the visual assets are the ones we'll get caught with. None of the code we'll get caught with. Mm-hmm. So where do you think most of the work goes in?
Yep. Discussion for another day, perhaps. I know we always roll around at the end of the episode and go, let's talk about this another time, and never come back to it. Until something big happens.
Naturally.
We've gone on Xbox rants and anti-capitalism and layoffs a couple times. I know, because I recommended the
podcast to
a friend of mine, and she was like, wow, that was more political than I thought. And I was like, oh, okay. It was the one where Asha Sharma just got hired and Ben and I were just oh, it's been 40 minutes. Maybe we should stop talking about this.
It happens.
Yeah.
Sure.
Well, it's symptomatic of a bigger problem, isn't it?
Which very is much.
Video games, they don't exist in a vacuum. Everything's related.
And that's just Dead Space.
Very good.
Yeah. You remember when they remade that? That's pretty good.
I played that. I haven't played the remake.
No,
I've
need to
play
it.
Beers. Beers. I very much liked this Bristol Beer Factory beer. It's a very lovely beer.
I like the can.
Ignore the West Coast.
Oh, yeah.
Absolutely.
That's
different. Yeah. It's very nice.
Ignore the West Coast naming on it. Concentrate on the rice lager side of things. But it's slightly bigger, slightly danker. Okay, you know, the West Coast IPA is there a little bit in heft, but not really in any of its bitterness. But it's still a nice beer, and I would absolutely reach for this again. Nice. Lucy, Trillium.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've just got the last bit of it here. Yeah, it's that bitterness, it tempered a bit, I think, as my palate got used to it. I think the wildflower honey, I think that showed up a bit more in like slightly floral and grassy notes, like on the finish with that bitterness. But that bitterness certainly very not potent, maybe a bit more obvious when I started drinking it. But yeah, it just tempered slightly, and it's like enough to where it was a satisfying long aftertaste, but I was getting more of those fruity flavors, probably more like more citrus fruits, maybe a bit of orange, more so than like the really tropical like aromas that I got off the aroma. Like halfway through the podcast, I might have just been sniffing it. I might have just been huffing those tropical fumes because it just smells so good. But yeah, so when you go into that, like, yeah, there's not as much, you know, fruity notes in the actual taste, but there's enough. But yeah, it's definitely a bit more weighted towards that like bitter side and the finish. But yeah, not quite getting like obvious notes of the wildflower honey. As I say, wild honey is probably a bit less in your face and obvious than, I guess, maybe if it's, I guess depending on the type of honey. But the wild honey that I've got, is it tastes a little bit more subtle than like the very sweet, like kind of a store-bought ones. But yeah, okay. It was still good, nice. Despite not getting the too many obvious notes of that honey.
Yeah, fair. Good. Anadil, with the Vault City.
I think somewhere around halfway. It's hard to tell because the tin was more than half. But anyway, once I had finished refilling it, about halfway through the remaining glass, the spice, I finally acclimatized the spice levels of both the cayenne and the ghost pepper, and it opened up. We were in the middle of that conversation. It's like, oh, I really want to talk about this beer, but like, oh wait, I will patiently wait despite my ADHD. Instead, I will. I'm so set on not interrupting about beer. I will then accidentally interrupt about anti-capitalism rants. but yeah, the mangoes started coming out a lot more, and it's one of those things where if you have enough spice, unless it's specific pepper, right, it just sort of stays there even if you're having more of it. And so it felt like the last third of this glass, I wasn't feeling the heat anymore because it was just sort of ambient. And then that mango came through, but it was obviously tempered with the general aura of the taste that was lingering, right? And it started to remind me of the that mango and like super ripe mango that the nose was. And what I will say is, from what I recall of the many moons ago original one, that one felt like, I think I described it as really capturing the, like, when I was in Central America and you get the like slightly underripe mango with citric acid and spice on it. Like cayenne probably, but like some sort of pepper. This is like the overripe version of it. Like, you're getting that juiciness and that slightly fruits gone bad alcoholic taste. And so the citric acidy taste and that like tartness, tightness of an underripe mango is gone, and this is replaced with a juiciness, but still like relative reserve. Like, it's not like a juice bomb. It's just like, oh, the lingering taste is just feels like overripe mango without like the, you can't take a bite of an overripe mango without just being inundated with it. So I actually turned the corner on this.
Nice.
Good.
I would have it again. Yeah. Like, I was like so kind of, and I think that you just, and so of course your mileage may vary because if your palate doesn't acclimatize, or you drink it, I think if you drink it too quickly, I think you will have a worse time, because I think the key was, we started talking and I kind of, like I said, this is not a beer that makes you go for it again. Yeah. So once I my mouth sat with the underlying heat, and there was enough time for it, my mouth to stop registering that, every sip was like, oh, this is really good. And I was taking small sips more often, but also when I saw the like I still have a little bit left, because basically when I got to here, I'm like, oh, I don't have any more left. And I started taking even smaller sips because I was really enjoying it. So like, yeah, full 180 on, I still wouldn't buy a six pack. Burn. I'm not insane, but like I would have it again. And I would actually be curious what the second in a row would feel like all the way through, because of how much you just need your palate to acclimatize to the heat. Like, I wouldn't, I would guess the second in a row would just be really enjoyable. I don't think you would need a third in a row, right? But, like, I'm mildly curious, but obviously it's not going to happen. But yeah, so yeah, fully love this beer.
Good. Brilliant. Oh, yeah. good beers all round for everyone. So, friends.
Growers, not showers.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah, definitely, definitely. Friends, if you've had any good beers, or you've played any good video games.
Or you're just going to Bone Town.
Or you're going to Bone Town with your grower, not your shower. Then give us a shout. Go to outoflives.net. Hit us up in the places that you go to. YouTube, Blue Sky, those sorts of things. Out of Lives everywhere. We're done. Thank you for joining us. Goodbye.
Bye.
Oh, this has a different connotation, but ciao.